We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Richard Zucchi with High on Healthy. And joining us today, we have Alyssa Spungen, who is with the Tucson Counseling Associates. Welcome aboard, Alyssa.
Thank you.
So, Alyssa, the Tucson Counseling Associates works closely with regards to psychedelics, in particular ketamine, for collective healing. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
We are a group private practice located in Tucson, Arizona, and we provide supervision for intern therapists, continuing education for clinicians, including ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, and then we also have a CAP clinic, ketamine-assisted psychotherapy in short.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And you say it's a group, so how large is the group of therapists and counselors that work together?
We have about 25 therapists in three locations across the city.
That's fantastic. And so with three locations across the city and 25, you're able to actually handle quite a large number of clients who are seeking help. Are they coming to you with regards to for the ketamine-assisted psychotherapy for particular issues in general, or are you seeing a broad array of the challenges? And how do you process intake?
Yeah, so right now the research, there's not a lot of published research about ketamine for you know, psychotherapeutic healing, but from what has come out, it shows that the efficacy is based on six treatments, and it's specifically helpful for those with PTSD or treatment-resistant anxiety or depression. So those are the people we're seeing. And the intake process is pretty lengthy. We ask that they have all of their medical information up to date, and then we see them for a psychiatric evaluation. And then there's a preparation session where they're, you know, starting to build rapport with their therapist. And then the medicine sessions, which are 2 to 3 hours long. And there's an integration session that follows each medicine session for, you know, long-term effects. Because there's a lot of IV clinics out there that, you know, people come in, kind of sit on the recliner, receive ketamine, and then they, you know, watch Netflix and go home.
But right.
We really try to build a ceremonial space. All of our CAP therapists are trained in the MAPS approach or the CIIS, psychedelic psychotherapy training.
Right.
And then we receive ongoing education with, you know, energy healers. And then we try to work with a community. We have a CAP scholarship for those in our community that can't access this treatment because a lot of it is out of pocket. We bill insurance for what we can,
right.
But it can be an inaccessible therapy. We do our best. I think our rates are really great relative to what's
sure.
happening right now.
So let's go more to the therapeutic practice itself. And, you know, I mean, some people, you know, are familiar with the fact that ketamine generally is used as a general anesthetic. But from a therapeutic practice, of course, it also helps people treat pain and the trauma that they experienced as a child or that they've been going through. It allows them to enter a state where they're able to reflect and guide themselves to a better state. And of course, there's as you mentioned, there's a lot of benefits around PTSD and depression. Can you speak to those specifically?
I like what you said about guiding themselves, because that's our biggest approach, is like contacting that inner healing intelligence. And we're really client-centered. And so they come in and we try to make it so that, you know, they're bringing their full selves into the process. And maybe they've been living in their trauma body since, you know, a big T trauma happened, or maybe it's complex trauma that they're continuing to experience, especially, you know, our current system. It's a traumatic system we live within. And so there's a break from the trauma body and there's space to process. A lot of times, you know, if you're living in your trauma body, you can't process trauma. So it gives you that space and that container with your therapist that's there the whole time.
Will that therapist have worked with the patient for a period before the session, or are they new and fresh?
Both. So some folks are reaching out to us specifically for CAP. Others, they may have been seeing their therapist for years. And then, you know, when we started the clinic about 2 years ago, it might have been recommended by your therapist. And so some are brought in from already seeing their therapist and others aren't.
Okay. And what about after they've had their treatment? And you recommend 6, but are there sessions between the treatments? Are there sessions scheduled for a period after?
So the six session model is a medicine session and an integration session. So if they're seeing their therapist weekly, then it's a 6-week practice. And then some clients will choose to enter a maintenance schedule where they see their therapist maybe once a month. And then we also provide group maintenance, which brings the cost down significantly and then just builds community too with other people that are receiving that type of treatment for their trauma.
Right.
And so we have that every 6 weeks as well.
Okay, so there is a continuous program that's put in place as part of it. And people who undergo the treatment, how long can they expect to see the benefits for? Is it something from your group and from in particular that you look as being a long-term solution, or is it something which, like so many others, you have to have ongoing treatments?
That's the hard question to narrow down, right? Like, we just had a nurse practitioner graduate student just do a research project for us by collecting some data about, you know, 2 months outside of treatment, 6 months, 4 months, what's the duration of the healing benefits. And she found that it's immediately afterwards that there is relief. And then I think it's harder to nail down, like, how long, how effective is this? I don't have any statistics I could offer you, but we have had feedback from clients, you know, 4 or 6 months out that say, like, I was in chronic pain every day and I haven't had it in 4 months. I think we're waiting on the results of that, but we're looking forward to finding out. And the integration sessions were really intended to capitalize on what realization or insights have happened within that space from the trauma. And then a lot of times we recommend there's a therapist on the other side of CAP. So even if they're not continuing to receive the medicine, that they're still capitalizing on what they've learned and seeing if there's maybe another approach that could support them on the next phase of their healing journey. Because healing isn't, you know, it's not a magic bullet, as we like to say.
It's not a broken arm where you can put a cast on it and it's crack it off after 6 weeks or 3 months and you're done. And, you know, I think that goes to my prior question in some ways, is that when people relieve themselves of the burden of abuse and trauma that they suffered, and they're able to accept what happened and put that component behind them and learn the coping skills, there's other things that will have happened in life that now become or come to the forefront that hopefully are less significant, but still need to be addressed. And so the ongoing treatment sometimes become a matter of, as you process, you now deal with the next ones.
Yeah. And the circumstances, maybe you're looking at your life in a different light and you're like, oh, this needs to change. Or I didn't see this before. And it's not something any of us can do alone, right? It's a process for sure.
And something you mentioned earlier about group therapy and group therapy spaces as being a game changer in the way you approach it. Why is that different, and why is it something that you look at as being a differentiating factor in your approach?
We offer both options, individual and group. We leave it up to the individual. Most people are currently right now a little bit hesitant to enter into a group approach if they don't maybe know the people that are showing up. I'm actually not entirely sure why that isn't more popular, because you know, I think in terms of psychedelic healing, it's not new. It's been around for generations and generations for many people who have done these practices for a long time. And it's in community that it's historically and traditionally been done. So maybe that's something that we'll see more of moving forward. But we really are excited about it because, you know, we're all facets of this crazy light diamond, right? Like reflecting different parts of ourselves back at each other. So sometimes it can be really, really beneficial to healing to get all of those different perspectives. And with the medicine, especially, maybe some folks come out of it and they're like, "Oh, was that experience normal for you? Right. How did you experience that?" Some people find that it's very somatic. Others find that it's very visual. Some people get really talkative, and so it's very different for each other. And I think recognizing the differences while also having that thread of what centers everybody in the medicine is really beneficial.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, the experience of going through something like this in a group versus alone can certainly have certain benefits. It's why, you know, a lot of people, when they're doing ayahuasca, it's part of a ceremony as a group, not an individual. And I was just wondering, with regards to your process, what did you help steer people into one or the other based on certain aspects or what they're trying to deal with?
Yeah, that's a little out of my personal, like, professional experience. When people ask me maybe what's better for them, a lot of times folks will just approach it as a financial consideration at first, because it is a much more accessible priced.
What is the difference in cost?
It's about a third of the cost. Yeah, I think we are able to bill insurance for a portion of the therapy right now. But out of pocket, I think with group, it's maybe like $1,100 total for all six. And then for individual, for us, it's a little over $3,000 right now.
Right. Okay. But you know, you've got 25 clinicians you mentioned on board who are working. So there's obviously quite a strong market in Tucson alone, which is nothing insignificant, but it's still one of the smaller cities around the country.
Well, I should clarify, we have 25 clinicians that work at TCA, Tucson Counseling Associates, but within the CAP clinic, which we call Soma Psychedelics,
right?
There's only, I think, maybe 7 or 8 clinicians. Yeah.
Okay. So how do those break out between the 25 and the 7 or 8 in terms of, are the seven or eight the ones who are the ones who practice the treatments and the other support, or?
They're kind of separate. We offer in-house training for providers that are interested in offering ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, but not every therapist wants to do that. So we have kind of a burgeoning, you know, space for clinicians that do, and we really hope to network with more providers that want to become psychedelic psychotherapists. So we happy hours around the city, looking for other practitioners that are local. And then we also offer, we've done 2 trainings for PESI providers for CAP.
Okay.
Hosting our first retreat at the end of January for providers that have gone through our training. And we have online self-paced modules for providers that want to go through our training as well. We've put in so much work to creating these.
Right.
Because we want to see the field blossoming in this regard.
For sure. Mm-hmm. For sure. So tell us, how did you get involved?
You know, Kate Kincaid, who's the owner of TCA, is one of my best friends. And I've been working in mental health for almost 6 years now. So I had 3 years of experience prior, before having to leave my last job. And I was kind of just in between looking for something. And so I became sort of in her admin assistant at first. And then it's sort of just, I wear a lot of hats in my role at TCA, and I love it. It's always changing and there's a lot of flexibility. So in terms of the CAP clinic specifically, it was just a kind of a natural progression of my role. And I'm really interested in psychedelic healing. So And I also offer meditation. So I've sat in the group space with our clients and providers, sometimes just leading people into a meditation and intention setting for the ceremony. So,
because you teach yoga and you lead groups as well, right? Which, how does that tie together for you?
Yeah, I have been studying meditation for about a decade now, and then have been teaching yoga for 4 years. And right now I'm not teaching. So I have a handful of coaching clients, and I really love guiding meditations or supporting people in finding safety in their bodies. So it's sort of, I get interesting opportunities to offer that through TCA. We had an invitation to go do a presentation for Gabby Gifford's team this year. Uh-huh. And I led a meditation at the beginning of that. And during different maintenance groups, I get to sit in and hold space with the therapists. So I sort of just fill in where they need me. And I like that sort of opportunity to practice different things and show up in different spaces.
For sure. And, you know, it's something which a lot of people, we talk about the, you know, the benefits of using a psychedelic and the way it can help us open our minds and help us address traumas or abuse that have existed. But one of the most powerful tool in all of that is still our minds. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to do is relieve our mind of the pain and of the burden of what we experience so that we can clearly assess and address our own challenges. And, you know, one amazing benefit of yoga is the power in which clearing your mind of everything else allows you to be free of those burdens. Mm-hmm. And how have you found that bringing those together has benefited any of the patients that you've interacted with?
Mm-hmm. The type of yoga I've been teaching for the last year is Shakti yoga, and it's mm-hmm. a type of yoga that's really centered in the womb space, whether right. that's the divine feminine space for all, or if that's actual anatomical center of the womb and the body. And from there, like really deeply listening in and then allowing the body to guide you instead of kind of mind over, they call it like top down versus like bottom up in therapy spaces, like whether you're doing the somatic practice or whether you're doing something more verbal processing. And so I think with that, it's really an invitation to meet people where they're at and then kind of hold space from there, but also create a larger space for them to occupy that they get to guide themselves within. And it's like, oh, there is my body, you know, like maybe there's this thought, but where is that thought located in the body? And does it have a corresponding sensation that we could feel? And then once you hold that feeling, where are you guided to go next? And I think psychedelics allow us to like not even access that, but to be within that. And in a way that's just, there isn't really a choice. It's just you're being guided and you can't help but notice that connection you have.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about mind and body, but we don't always recognize they're not the same, or they're not, they can be two entities in the one place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't remember which tradition it was, but it was like when we talk about the mind, maybe it's a Buddhist tradition that it's like the mind is here in the heart space. The mind, you know, our definition of mind changes cross-culturally. So that's an interesting thing to think about too.
It is. And, you know, it's part of what's necessary for people who are trying to address the issues around anxiety and depression and trauma, is that recognition of an understanding of how separate your mind and body is. You know, I use an analogy with people all the time with regards to things being separate, and that you can have a broken arm or a cut on your hand and you can look at it and say, my hand is cut, my arm is broken, and it may hurt, but it's attached to me. Whereas when my mind is hurt, it is me.
And when we don't differentiate between those things, we confuse the pains as all being one, where we can set aside the pains that others do to us because they may injure our mind, but they're affecting our body.
Yeah. I've heard that in terms of like the difference between guilt and shame as well. You know, guilt is like, I have done something wrong, and shame is I am wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember during my first yoga teacher training, the lead teacher was referencing his mentor and said that he would carry around this like spray bottle, water.
Yep.
Anytime someone had like a really strong thought or feeling about something, the teacher would kind of pause them and then spray the water and be like, just hold that thought. And then like watch the water. And he would spray the water and you'd see water droplets splash out. And then once they settled, he's like, this is also your mind. Like, just let it settle. Uh-huh. Hold it for a second. Pause.
So how does that action and experience of watching the water settle is analogous to the process for somebody going through a treatment?
Yeah, that's a good question. My first thought about that is breath. You know, like breath connects the mind to the body. Breath is where thoughts kind of ride on that wave. And so if you can pay attention to the breath, we're automatically in a space of, you know, at least inviting presence in. And I don't think that's possible when you're in a trauma response necessarily, but with the medicine, that is possible. There is a possibility of breath being something that is, you know, contains multitudes instead of something that's just like, you know, boring or, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, because you're trying to get people to open their minds and to clear their mistaken beliefs so that they can get to their true beliefs and values about themselves. And that process is one that people need to be able to do independent of the treatment later. Mm-hmm. How do you reinforce that as they're going through the process in terms of learning the skills?
I think every therapist approaches that differently, like mm-hmm. using whatever skill set they have and the language and the cultural considerations of the people that are coming into the center.
Right.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe I'll have a better answer for that if, you know, when and if I become a therapist.
Right. No, but I wondered if there was a practice around and guidance for the therapists at the clinic to establish that in a uniform way, because people who are coming in through all the different visits may not always see the same therapist, but also they're arriving for a particular experience.
Yeah. So if they're doing either group or individual, they're going to have the same therapist the whole time.
Okay.
That might change, you know, if they finish the treatment and then enter into a maintenance schedule, they might see a different therapist for their individual or their group sessions.
Uh-huh.
When we created the process, we were approaching it with internal family systems modality and sensory right. psychotherapy. And so approaching it, but part of what the training model has become is like, who are you as a clinician and how can you use that in this space? And just trying to bring out, you know, the inner healing intelligence of the practitioners as well.
Okay. And, you know, one thing you just mentioned there made me wonder, with regards to the clients who do come in, do they come from all walks of life? Are you know, there's some I know that when they focus on PTSD are working heavily on veterans. Others are working with, and you know, people who have suffered particular forms of abuse. Are you trying to focus in particular areas, or is it, what's happening? Where are you seeing also the most responsive group?
Yeah, so only seeing folks that have been diagnosed with PTSD or treatment-resistant conditions and have tried, you know, that means they've tried two or more modalities under the guidance of a licensed practitioner that haven't proved effective in alleviating their symptoms. I think there's some accessibility issues with just, you know, how we're operating right now. We have to operate within a schedule of Monday through Friday. medicine sessions have to start during the week. And so that already rules out a lot of working people. And then the VA insurance doesn't currently cover this. So it's hard for vets to get that paid for. And there is an accessibility issue with the finances. So we have a scholarship fund we can offer. You know, we've done two big fundraising events and
right.
We haven't gotten very much. We're looking for grants in order to offer it for free, specifically for our multiply marginalized community members and those who are land defenders. That's sort of where those are the people we want to support. We want to support everyone, but in terms of making it accessible for those who it's currently inaccessible for, we're hoping to move in that direction as well. So there are some, you know, I think once we can start maybe billing insurance for more of it or...
Sure. I mean, but that'll change as it moves from Schedule 3 and a variety of different things. Those are a whole other slew of challenges there. Alyssa, we are out of time for today, but people who want to learn more, how can they, and, you know, I assume some people will travel into Tucson, but a lot of people in Tucson themselves are, it's easy. How can they find out more about you and the organization?
Yeah. If they go to our website, TucsonCounselingAssociates.com, if they speak to me directly, they can reach out at TucsonCounselingAssociates@gmail.com. And then we're also pretty active on Instagram, Tucson Counseling Associates.
So there's a line there that it's always going to be Tucson Counseling Associates. All right. Well, thanks for joining us today on High on Healthy. And
thank you.
Thank you. And thanks to everybody for listening. I'm Richard Zwicky, and we'll be back again with you soon.
We get it. After all the frustration, the endless cycles of hoping for a system that actually works, you're ready for something steady. Something that delivers without constant workarounds or headaches. That's why we're excited to introduce the 2025 redesign of the Buzz CRM. Built with you in mind, it's more intuitive, faster, and smarter than ever. Finally, a CRM that sees your worth, streamlines your workflows, and gives you the tools to thrive without needing to prove yourself over and over again. Because you deserve a lifeline after all those outdated platforms. You deserve a system that keeps up with your goals and grows with your success. This isn't just a redesign, it's a revolution. Visit thebuzzcrm.com today. That's thebuzzcrm.com.